I'm Bob Boylan with All Songs Considered.
So I'm going to do this, because they do this in the movies.
On April 14th, 2008, a slightly tentative Laura Gibson came to NPR to perform at my desk. Here's a tape of the introduction Stephen Thompson and I gave that day, recounting how this concert came to be.
The little backstory of this is that Stephen Thompson and I love Laura Gibson's music, and we went eagerly to see and hear at South by Southwest in Austin at the end of the month. When we got to this place called the Rusty Crusty
like
Nickel or whatever it was
nickel.
Called, the Thirsty yeah. Nickel, the something nickel, the crowd, you'll hear Laura's very, very gentle, and the crowd just talking was louder than Laura, and we glared at the sound person to try to do anything we could to get.
We shushed.
We even did that, and at the end of the concert, we realized we hardly heard a word Laura sang, and it was sort of really disappointing. So she came down off the stage, and Stephen introduced himself to her, and
yeah, I just realized that rather than going to shows where very quiet singer-songwriters are drowned out, we could just have them perform at our desks. So there's a little element of self-interest and laziness, but also
Laura should be heard, and so Stephen invited Laura to come play at my desk, and she called a week or whatever so ago and said, I think basically I'm coming to town. And we said, well, we got the desk ready. So we're going to videotape this for our blog, and maybe it's the start of something, and maybe it's not, but we're certainly glad to have Laura Gibson here today. Thank you for doing this.
It seemed a wacky idea at the time. Now, 750-some-odd tiny desk concerts later, it seems commonplace, though it's still pretty darn special. On this edition of All Songs Considered, a conversation with Laura Gibson remembering that nerve-wracking first Tiny Desk concert. Our conversation opens with Laura Gibson describing that bar in Austin, the Thirsty Nickel.
I can still picture the space pretty clearly. It was such a rough show. I'm such a quiet person and have such a quiet voice that the minute I got on stage, I was like, oh, this is maybe a terrible idea to have flown down here and played my quiet songs in this really noisy room.
Describe the room to people.
It was kind of a long hallway of a kind of narrow room, and the bar was just up front. And it was one of those shows that I don't think they checked people at the door. They just kind of let everyone in. I just imagined people that really wanted to party were in this loud chaos of South by Southwest, and they're like, oh, finally a bar we can hear each other talk, because my voice and my songs were so quiet.
The two things I remember was that it was basketball season and people were watching a basketball game and cheering. I also remember them pointing this A speaker out into the street. Like, so even the PA was against you, you know? I mean,
yeah.
They were trying to attract more people, but we couldn't hear you. But keep going with your memory.
Yeah, so I was on the stage, and I think 2 minutes in, I was like, oh my gosh, I have 45 more minutes to go. How am I going to do this? And I saw you guys out there. I recognized you guys and was like, well, I can't just phone it in. You know, I got it. And there's various friends from music that I had that had come. And everyone was, I got the feeling everyone was really with me. And I think that made me just want to go for it as much as I could, even if you still couldn't hear me.
And it was just you and an acoustic guitar, right? I mean, I don't remember.
Yeah, well, my friend Dave Depper, he sat in on a couple songs, but it was one of those things he's been my best buddy forever, and he was playing with another band, and it was kind of like, oh, why don't you sit in? And yeah, we can run it once in a hotel room, it'll be fine. And then we couldn't. He got up there to play with me, and we couldn't quite hear each other. And so it was just a really rough time, but funny at the same time. I think the audience was so kind and sweet and with me. I remember looking out and seeing Stephen raising his fist at the sound engineer.
Stephen Thompson,
thought, all right.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I was still at the point, it was just after my first, I mean, not long after my first record, before my second record, and I was still at the place where I was just not sure if this whole thing was for me.
The whole big in playing music picture, right?
Music and touring and playing shows. And I'm quiet and I don't think of myself as a real sparkly performer. And so I was just kind of at that sort of sensitive point in not knowing, like, so far it had gone nicely. And, you know, I had this, my first record, and we didn't have a publicist. We'd, at that point, we just like had a party and mailed packages off. And
had you played much out of Portland or this?
I did a couple short tours before then, but they're the kind of shows, you know, a lot of house shows and places where the people were there expecting to to see me. And, right. And I'd played a few loud bars, but this was like particularly loud, and, you know, it just felt so tough the whole way through. And then I remember getting off the stage, and I was like, well, I should say hi to the NPR guys. And I was so, like, had this inner turmoil, or kind of also adrenaline from having, like, gone through this thing and in front of people and struggled. And I thought, well, the only thing worse than, like, playing that show would to be, like, immediately burst into tears upon meeting these very kind NPR guys that, like, stuck it out with me the whole show. And you guys were so funny and nice, and immediately had the idea of playing at your desk. And I think at the time I was like, sure, you know, sure, not, I kind of thinking that probably won't really happen.
Right. It felt at the time like it was just chit-chat in a room that was fun.
One of those midnight South by Southwest ideas that probably won't come into fruition.
Now, I can't remember the next part of the story, which is whether I contacted you or you were touring with the Decemberists, right?
Yeah, I was. At the time, I knew that I would be in D.C. a month later, because I had gotten Colin Malloy had a solo of the Decemberists had a solo tour, and he had invited me to open, and that was a really big deal for me, and the first time I played in front of lots and lots of people, and so I knew that I would play in D.C., and I think I probably knew the date, because I like a date memory, and so I was like, all right, I'm coming to D.C. on this date. And
April
and,
14, I think it was.
Yeah. And so I think we had, I mean, maybe, I don't know who followed up with whom, but we played in D.C. on a Sunday night.
That wasn't the Shirley Collins tour. What was he?
Sam Cooke.
Ah, right. So Colin Molloy was doing a Sam Cooke tour. He had done a little EP, right?
He did these tour-only EPs of covers every time he did a solo tour. And it was really fun. So we played in D.C. that Sunday, and they were going on to New York in the tour bus. I was riding along with them in the tour bus, and I was like, well, I'm going to stay and play at Bob Boylan's desk tomorrow morning. And they're like, all right, I guess. Like, are you sure? And my boyfriend was actually on tour, and we happened to meet in Washington, D.C., and so he was with me. Sean was with me in that. And we went into the NPR office, and I still wasn't sure, you know, if this was really going to happen, even though we had had a few more emails by then. And then I performed at your desk.
We sat you in a chair behind my desk. It was very low.
a
single microphone.
I think the mic was like duct taped to the ceiling or something. I remember it kind of like hanging.
Very possibly. How did it feel to play? Because these days we'll get a crowd of 100 or 150 people. Then it was, I don't think we made an announcement to tell employees to come.
I think you did, but it was sort of a come to Bob's desk.
Okay.
and people were like, all right. But it was a pretty small crowd, or people were a little, you know, curious, but also working. And I remember, because I was touring with Colin Malloy, and the Decemberists crowds are full of these wonderful theater kids that like to sing along with people. I'd been playing these shows, and I had a song where I every night would ask them to sing along, and they would very enthusiastically and articulately say, yes, we'd be pleased to sing with you, and the crowd. And when I got there, you know, it was Monday morning at the office, and I was like, okay, if you guys want to sing along. And everybody just looked at me like, we're at work.
I think I'm going to pull up a little volume here on this. Let's see if I'm close to the place. Is this a song?
Yep.
And the song is called
Night Watch.
Let's listen a little together.
As if the words could bring me back. They say that love can bring you back. Bring you back to
little da da da's in the crowd. What is it like to hear yourself? This is precisely with, well, precisely meaning with give or take a week, 10 years ago, the style of music you were doing, your voicing. And
yeah, it is really strange. I haven't listened to that or really anything of myself from any era, but especially of that era. And it's funny because that record in particular was my first group of songs, and it was really a record about being alone in the world and being a person in the world, but what it means to be in community and loving people, but also to just, what does it mean to be alone? And
this is it, if you come to greet me.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny, I mean, I think everything I've written since then also has to do with being alone and quite often and also being in with other people and connecting with other people. And it's funny, a lot of those songs, I sort of am imagining other places in them. And I always notice that when I listen to the songs on that record, that most of them were written in this small room alone. And I was imagining a lot of things like, what if I were this? What if I were this? And now I think I write, you know, maybe from a place of, they're still imagining happening, but I tend to kind of be a little more present in what's going on, trying to describe that.
And the quality, the tone of your voice, is that?
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think my voice is still delicate. My range has expanded quite a bit, I think, just from singing. You know, I hadn't really sang much before I made that first record, not much in front of people. And I think just playing shows and after that, I did this record with Ethan Rose, a good friend. We did a collaborative record which was more experimental, and I think I tested the limitations of my voice, and it just, I kind of grew into my voice quite a bit since then. But it's nice to hear. I like, it's a baby voice.
It is pretty beautiful. The effect of, I mean, early on, Tiny Desk didn't have quite the range of people watching it as it does now. But what effect did doing that concert have on you, if any?
It's funny, at first I wasn't sure. You sent me a nice email afterwards saying, like, people really like it, and with some comments from people. And I didn't quite understand the effect it had until a little bit later, maybe when I kept meeting people at shows that said, oh, the first time I heard you was on that first Tiny Desk concert. And I mean, there's different ways to think about the effect. I think certainly introduced me to a larger audience, and every time an anniversary happens or we've talked about it, you know, it's been, new people have been introduced to my music, you know, a number of times, and just because of its existence and what it grew to be. And so that's so wonderful and helpful. And also, I think just being, as I said, I was kind of in this moment that I wasn't quite sure if music was for me, and that experience of, you know, having this terrible feeling show and being in the middle of it and thinking, like, this is just not working, and to have this amazing thing come out of it. And I think that has really been something that both changed my understanding of what having a music career would be, but also I continued to see that, you know, your expectations are never met but always succeeded at the same time. And I think again and again, I'm always just, so many things don't happen or things go wrong or thing, you know, and on tour and making records. And but at the same time, I'm just forever delighted and surprised by the things that just come from nowhere or come from
the worst possible
seemingly
moments sometimes.
Terrible moments. Right. Yeah. And so I think that was for me in that moment of my career, in that moment for me as an artist, it was just so important for me to learn that, because it's been how it is, you know, and how having an artist's career is so much like that. There's just so much surprise, and you just never know from one moment to the next what are the things that become the memorable highlights. And had we not done the Tiny Desk, had that not happened, or had I not been coming through DC the next month, or had it just ended up being one of those ideas that come at midnight in Austin
and don't come to fruition.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I still possibly would have laughed at that bad show and went forward, but I think to have such an extreme example of something wonderful and helpful coming from something that just felt like might be the end, you know. I think that's such an important thing for me to have learned at that point, that I am, you know, I continue to learn that now. And, you know, I just finished my fifth record, and I still am always kind of doors opening and opportunities coming and friends and collaborations, and there's so much that I'm still quite surprised by all the time, which is great.
That's fantastic. Is there anything that maybe you wanted to say that didn't get asked or anything?
Well, thank you for following through with an idea that could have just remained an idea. And I hope that we're at the 10-year anniversary. So I look forward, I'm imagining the 50-year anniversary when the chip in your brain downloads questions to the chip in my brain, and then we send them out into the world, and we're still as delighted and surprised by things as we were 10 years ago.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Laura Gibson. She continues to be an artist we love and listen to all these years later. Laura returned for a second Tiny Desk concert, the first artist ever to do that. We brought her back for Tiny Desk concert number 200. You can subscribe to the Tiny Desk concert series on your favorite podcast app or watch them at npr.org. There's also a Roku app. We also post them on YouTube. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.
I would conjure up your words and draw them from your lips as if the words could bring me back. They say that love can bring you back, bring you back.
Singing along.